At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
O'Reilly!
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Talking in the Rain. My name is Sara Unju, and today my guest is Vancouver-based playwright Dave DeVoe. Dave writes plays for younger audiences that focus on fostering conversations, especially around the theme of queerness. His latest work, Papa Penguin Play, will make its debut with the Carousel Theatre for Young People here in Vancouver from May 15th until June 2nd. We talk about the creation process, the rehearsal process, and how autobiographical this work is. We also talk about how some of his other work have gone international. We get into drag, because Dave does drag as Peach Cobbler. We talk about Parents Are a Drag, which is a drag show that him and his husband Cameron McKenzie hosted together. Cameron also does drag as Isolde and Baron. We talk about how their children are involved with their artistic ventures and how hands-on he is during the rehearsal process and everything else in between. I hope you enjoy. Well, welcome, Dave. Thank you so much for coming on here. Let's get a little introduction. First of all, do you want to introduce yourself and maybe also talk a little bit about what the Papa Penguin plays about?
Absolutely. So I'm Dave DeVoe, he, him. I am, I'm many things. I'm the co-artistic and managing director of Carousel Theatre for Young People. I also worked with my husband to start ZZ Theatre, which is a queer company here in Vancouver. I'm also a playwright. And so we'll be talking a bit about my latest play, the Papa Penguin Play. I'm also a queer parent. We have two beautiful kids. I'm also a drag performer under the name Peach Cobbler. So I wear lots of hats, like all of us do, especially in the arts. We have no choice but to wear a multitude of hats. But I'm really excited that right now I get to primarily keep my artist hat on as we're in rehearsals for my play, the Papa Penguin Play, which was co-commissioned by Carousel Theatre for Young People before I actually worked here. It was commissioned by the previous management and co-commissioned by the Vancouver Children's Festival, also with some help from ZZ. So, you know, in the arts, like in the queer community, we all sort of hold hands to make magical things happen. And this play is no exception. It's a play really about family in all its colors and shapes and vibrancies. I think especially as a queer parent, I'm really intrigued by notions of family and what people think family might be, particularly people whose understanding of family is maybe a bit limited. And I like to explore blowing up those definitions through the art that I make.
I love that so much. There's so many things that you can do with art. And I love it when people use it to explore things, questions, ideas that are maybe a little, for some reason, controversial, like having a queer family. Yeah, I was gonna ask, so you said this was commissioned a while ago. How long does it take for you to usually, from idea to, yes, this is a script I can give to the company? What is that process like for you? How long does that take usually?
It's a great question. I mean, I think, I myself have never given birth, but I think I'm told by my beautiful friends and loved ones who have given birth that each birth is different. Certainly the gestation period is roughly the same as far as human babies, but creative ideas, all of my plays have had very different life cycles. So some went from idea to a first draft within a day or two. But then, you know, the first draft is not the final draft. So I've had plays go from idea to production in about 2 years. I've had plays go from idea to production in like 7, 8 years. So it really depends. This one took a long time, not because of the writing itself, but because, you know, leadership changeover, pandemic, all sorts of factors that were at play. But this play is also, I would say, probably the most autobiographical that I've ever written. That's something I shied away from for a very, very long time. If I want to have a conversation about family and particularly show what a queer family, not all queer families, but this queer family might look like on stage, I really need to draw on my own life. I've worked for my entire career in theater for young audiences. I'm a real advocate and I'm adamant about its value because it often gets diminished because somehow people feel like theater for young people is lesser than, which feels like a very North American mind frame, because when you look at theater for young audiences out of Europe, out of Australia, out of New Zealand, it is exquisite. It's really artistically sharp. And so something that, you know, I've been really pushing for through my career is that, you know, kids are not stupid. They're just young. And we need to be bringing an intelligence and a rigor to the work that, you know, there are many ways that I can fill 45 minutes in my kid's life. I don't need a play to fill time in a day. What I need from a play is for someone to present ideas to my kid and for my kid to start contemplating what he thinks of those. You know, I've written a lot of plays and by no means do I think I am smarter than my audience or any of my collaborators in the room. I think my job is to, with the most rigor and authenticity that I can, present these ideas and then let people start digesting those, that the play is sort of the beginning of a larger conversation that might even just be happening with themselves, but hopefully within their families or in the car on the way home or with their colleagues or in classes. So Papa Penguin is a nice way for me, well, for me to do two things. One, to sort of introduce some ideas that people can possibly relate to or possibly that challenge them, but also to add something to the Theater for Young Audiences canon that depicts a family like mine, because I've never seen one. And we are not the only queer family. There's many, many of us. And I think, you know, in general, when we, like queer people ingesting culture, we're so conditioned to just accept heteronormativity as sort of the mainstream baseline for relationships and how the world's constructed. And so I'm excited that, you know, a whole bunch of people who don't know queer families will come see this show and see that we're like any other family, just possibly a little more glamorous now and again.
Oh, most likely. It's also, to me, a little, not necessarily funny, but in a, you know, like a ironic kind of way, funny how these people who are so stuck on the idea that a family is a straight couple having a biological child, and they make this argument and they don't even consider the fact, not even just queer families, but straight couples who maybe can't have their own, you know, biological children, so they will either need to get some help with surrogacy or adopt a child, and they end up ostracizing, I guess, their allies. I don't know. Their own kind. I don't know how to say this without it sounding a little judgmental, but yeah. And so I think it's great that you're doing this. It has I don't know how old your children are. Do you take them to plays, both you and your husband working in theater, being artists? Is it more of a work for you where it's, you know, how sometimes people just kind of leave work at work and they can't really interact with it outside of work that much. So for you, does that happen, or are you of a very, you know, a family that is very involved with arts outside of work as well?
It's interesting. I think we sort of operate in the same way that I have friends whose parents ran like a convenience store, right? And so the whole family works at that store, right? Like everyone does their part because that's the family business. And that really is theater in our worlds. Like I run a company, my husband runs a company. When we're in rehearsal and both of us have to be in the rehearsal hall, there will inevitably at any given point be at least one kid in the hall. So our kids, our eldest is 6 and a half and our youngest is 10 months. So, you know, the 6 and a half-year-old has been in every rehearsal hall for every show we've ever done. He comes to see the shows. They're not, most of those shows have not been for kids, but he's there and I think he really appreciates sort of the work that goes into making a show. It also helps that we've had opportunities to be in creation mode as a family. Just before the pandemic, so it must have been maybe in 2019. Oh, in 2019, we were commissioned by the Children's Festival to create a drag show for kids and families, which was called Parents Are a Drag. So it was performed by my husband and I and our son, and I think in many ways that's where sort of the heart of what Papa Penguin Play is now really emerged because we had all these families come see the show, you know, which is a drag show. It's like it's fun and upbeat and playful, but there were families sobbing watching the show. And I still get like choked up thinking about it because, and you know, they came to chat with us afterwards and they said, "Never in my life have I seen a queer family on stage in a show for kids." You know, you see queer relationship often in works that are aimed at adults. And so you know, Papa Penguin becomes sort of a full circle moment because now this is a show that is really about our family. You know, during the pandemic when we were stuck at home, Dexter was 2 at that time and he just wanted to do shows. So we would just do shows in our living room every day just for ourselves. That, you know, that is such a part of our lives. And if we couldn't have an audience, we could do it for ourselves. Sometimes we were actually given a few opportunities to do it digitally live from our living room, which was really funny. So, you know, I bring Dexter to as much theater as I can. And then he is part of every process that we're part of, whether it's Cameron and I working together, like with Papa Penguin or with other shows. So we'll see what, I mean, Dexter's a really outgoing, gregarious, performative kid, and we'll see what our little babe ends up being. He's less gregarious, but
Well, he's only 10 months old.
exactly.
That's so cute. I love that Dexter was in Parents Are a Drag as well. How was he
Yeah.
involved with that show?
So he was in a few about 3 or 4 numbers with us. His arrival on stage is quite lovely. My husband does like Circle of Life from The Lion King, and so of course little Dexter was the Simba reveal. And the audience, you know, and we warn the audience, we're like, something's about to happen. It's going to be really special. And when that special thing happens, we need you not to scream because that might actually be really scary. And so they're all like really giddy but really respectful of that. And then we were supposed to that show got picked up by all the children's festivals in Canada, but of course the pandemic happened, so it never was able to go forward. But what we were able to do was the Vancouver Festival once again sent us like a camera and some equipment, and they asked us to do like a version from home. So we sort of shot this little video called Home is a Drag, which is us, you know, in full glamour, but doing like mundane things like washing the dishes with our kid sort of running around. And then we were able to do it live, well, a modified version called Parents Are Still a Drag once the pandemic had sort of loosened up and the festival was happening in person. And it was amazing to see, you know, in the first version of the show, Dexter was ostensibly a really cute prop. And now he was this like this little dude with real opinions, and he sort of chose new numbers because he wanted to be part of them, and he chose how he would look. And even now, he keeps asking, he's like, when are we doing our next show? And he's told us, maybe you can be backup dancers, but maybe it's just me and you can do your own numbers. And I just love that he's taking agency over his artistry. I mean, he's a musical kid. He writes songs that he writes songs every day. He's a drummer. He's a really cool, sophisticated artist already. So I look forward to someday being able to collaborate with him in even more meaningful ways.
Yeah, and I love that. This is, I just want to remind both myself and everyone that Dexter's 6.5 years old.
Yeah.
That's insane. Super cool, though. I'm sure he's going to be a great artist slash performer when he grows up. Also, I love that he's already a performer. He's like, no, you be my backup dancers. I'll do this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Just the other day, we went to our friend's wedding, this beautiful queer wedding. It was a theater wedding, a lot of theater folks. And so there were some musician friends who had been asked to perform at the reception. And my beautiful son went up to the couple getting married and said, "Hey," like he didn't talk to us about this. He just went for it. He said, "Hey, can I do a number?" And they said, "Yeah, of course, Dexter, sure." And he went around and he recruited musicians in the room. And they were like, "Well, we don't know what you want us to play." And he said, "Just play something. We'll figure it out." And he went up and he did an original song, which he improvised his way through. It had a full rhyme scheme and it was riveting. And the audience kept thinking like, what's going on right now? So he's a bit of a prodigy, I think.
Oh my God, sounds like it. I can't wait in 10 years. I'm
Yeah.
gonna be like, yeah, I know of him.
Yeah.
I interviewed his dad. Oh, I love that so much. I hope, you know, everything works out for him. That sounds
Yeah.
amazing. And I want to go back to the Papa Penguin play for a second, because you mentioned that this is like your most autobiographical work that you've done. This was, you know, you created an inspiration with your own experiences and as well as the book Tango Makes Three. The characters, Peaches and Izzy, are the parents in the play. How much of you and Cameron would you say are in Peaches and Izzy?
Well, I mean, my drag name in real life is Peach Cobbler, and Cameron's is Isolde and Baron. So Peaches and Izzy, it very much is playing like on the clown dynamic that we perform on stage, like a sort of Joey and a Goose, high status, low status, which has always been our shtick. And you know, obviously we've sort of really amped that up a bit to create these sort of larger than life characters. But the play really does, you know, it follows these two show penguins who put on daily drag show 3 times a day in the zoo for tour buses that drive through. And at a certain point, they think like, this can't be all there is. I feel like there's more to life. And they, you know, they see all of these other penguins who are laying eggs and raising young, and they think, well, I want to do that. And obviously that's complicated, but they end up getting help from the zookeeper, Mr. Sister, who helps them procure an egg, and they're able to have their beautiful chick, Hedgie. So when we meet them, when the play starts, it is Hedgie's first birthday party. So we, as the audience, are there at the zoo witnessing this birthday party, you know, complete with like a cake made of octopus fillet and cod and shrimp, but because, you know, it's a penguin. And Mr. Sister doing like a magic show, like you might see at a kid's birthday party. And Hedgie's waiting for her dads to arrive because they're not at the party. And she gets a little more scared and nervous as she's waiting longer and longer. I was really trying to feather in, you know, certainly with our kid during the pandemic, we were together 24/7. And when we started coming out of the pandemic and when he started going to daycare, it was complicated of like, I don't know who I am or how I exist if I'm not in proximity to my parents, which I think, you know, there's a whole generation of kids that really went through. And so anyway, eventually we figure out why the penguins are missing, and it all, of course, ends beautifully and happily. But on our way there, we have drag shows, we have live singing for musical numbers, we have dancing, we have puppets. A lot happens in under an hour. It's kind of remarkable to watch in the rehearsal hall. The cast and the design team are just cooking with gas. And it really, for a show that's about family in all of its shapes and colors, the team we've assembled really are our chosen family. Like some of our movement director who's doing some choreo is one of my oldest friends who I lived with for many, many years. Our puppet designer and director is Dexter's favorite auntie. Our niece is doing the lighting design. Our composer MJ and I wrote my first musical together like 15, 16 years ago, and now we're coming back together all this time later. So it's really, I really like that the intention of the show itself and the heart of the show trickles down to the team itself and not just the people who will be receiving it. That sort of heartbeat exists from its creation through to its execution.
I love that. That is very cute. And I'm glad you mentioned the drag performances and the puppetry because I kind of want to get into that a little bit. When you are working on a play, when you're writing a play, do you know that the play will feature these elements, or are they kind of introduced with the theater that is producing it?
Great question. With this particular play, it's on the page, but I tend to not write a lot of stage directions in my plays in general, just because I'm about story and dialogue and not really about the. I think a director's job is how to move bodies through space. So with this show, it's like, yeah, it says in the character descriptions, like these penguins do these drag shows, and periodically it's like, Izzy does a number, and then I'll just sort of. I won't say like what's the song, but just like this is the spirit. These are the artists who it may be, just to give an indication of what kind of number it might be. And then at one point I say, yeah, here, like we meet baby Hedgie as a puppet. And what I love about theater, what I love about being a writer specifically for the theater is, if I was writing novels, the work is sort of mine and mine alone. It is designed to exist on the page and be consumed sort of one reader at a time. And theater's not that. It's a living document, right? So even my final draft is going into a room of really whip smart artists who are then going to bring their A game to that work. And I love, being able to sort of then like let's shift this scene a bit because what you're doing is really cool, and let's actually I'd love to make more space for you to do that. So I bring a blueprint of sort of this is the foundation of the piece, and then everyone starts sort of figuring out what colors we should paint the walls and what should actually go in the house.
Yeah. And since you also work for Carousel Theater and ZZ Theater, so you're not only the playwright of this play, but you're involved in that way for this production as well. So, considering all of these, how involved are you with the production of this play specifically?
Well, not as hands-on as I might like because, of course, the 10-month-old. So if my husband is in the rehearsal hall 5, 6 days a week, someone needs to be with the baby. So I am usually this Mondays are the only day that I am here in the office because the rest of the week I'm with the baby, working from home, sometimes strapping him to me and coming to work when I really need to physically be here. And then I'm sort of zooming in sometimes. I come in to watch runs. I follow the daily rehearsal notes to see what's changing and how I can support that. But for the most part, we're week two of the rehearsal process starts tomorrow, and most of the changes to the text are sort of done. And now it's really up to the cast and the designers to fully execute their work. It's just as well done with the baby. I don't love being in a some playwrights love being in a rehearsal hall every day when their work is being staged. And I'm not that. Like I firmly believe that with this play, I had years to try different things on the page and think, oh, that didn't work, let's try something else, and eventually settle into what this play became. And I really like giving space for actors to do the same. I don't necessarily think that actors have the same freedom to sort of try and fail and just be bold, even if it's not necessarily what the text thinks in front of the writer. So I like to make myself a bit scarce and then come in when there's something that everyone thinks like, yeah, this feels right. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I actually, it's funny. I just watched a little, like a short on YouTube about this professor who writes a play and is directing it. And in the rehearsals, he's like, everything needs to be said exactly the same to the script, to the dot. And he gets mad at people if they, miss even one word, which is, wild concept. How do you feel about, because people, we can't really memorize everything as they are, in like the amount of time that is given for a professional theater production usually. And so how do you feel about actors maybe changing up the lines a little bit? Or yeah, I guess that's my question.
So I do have to disagree with you that I do think actors, like by design, they do memorize things sort of word perfect. That is like a big part of the rehearsal process. However, what I like about the process is, there sometimes an actor is like consistently stumbling over the same phrase. And if that happens, I can sort of walk them through, like, here's the intention of it. But if it still happens, I'm like, aha, then there's a problem with the line, right? Like at a certain point, this is the human and the brain that needs to actually say these words. So if the sequence I've provided is not aligning with them, let's help them out. And so certainly, we've had a lot of, and not necessarily in this play, but in a lot of my work over the years, we've just sort of changed lines to accommodate an actor, or even just changed lines because what they said instead of what was on the page was better. You're like, oh, that's a funnier punchline. Can we use that? I'll say, yeah. So I think everyone absolutely does their best to be as word perfect as possible. This is a play with a lot of moving parts. So I anticipate that, some days when they're in the middle of doing the puppetry while doing quick changes and doing drag numbers, that some lines may end up being modified and the spirit of the play itself will remain intact.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. So I want to get into Peach Cobbler a little. So, how did you come up with the name? And also, do you also kind of pronounce it with a Jersey accent in your mind? Like I do.
So I mean, the genesis of Peach Cobbler is like a bit bizarro. So Isolde was doing drag before I was, and we were working a lot with our dear friend and collaborator, Marina Ziarto, who's a sort of set designer and installation designer. She's a really cool human. And so the three of us created this tiny show for this festival at the Fire Hall called 20 Minute Drag School. And it was literally a 20-minute show where we gave the audience 10 2-minute lessons in how to do drag. And we recruited someone from the audience. And by the end of the 20 minutes, they perform a number with us. It is a fever dream. It was this mile a minute, like wild thing we did. And so, Isolde was sort of the glamorous queen being the star, and we needed a character who was actually like delivering the information we needed to convey, like the history of drag, the importance of drag. And so we for whatever reason decided to call that character Professor Peach Cobbler, and we were like, okay, well, Dave will play that character, it'll be fine. So sort of this professor vibe. So then years later, a couple years later, maybe three or four, I don't know. So Isolde had this show called Apocalyptic at the Cobalt, and we started a segment called Mean Teen Queen, which was for first timers trying something in drag. At the time, Isolde Cameron was creating a show at Studio 58 called What a Drag that I was sort of doing a bit of dramaturgy on, where we were teaching, a class how to become drag queens and kings and things. And so it felt important to the process that they try doing drag in front of an audience, not just in a studio at their school. So Mean Teen Queen was sort of a way for them to come down and try a thing in front of an audience. And people loved it. You know, people were just like throwing money at the stage and really making these young people feel happy with the kind of work that they were exploring. So I decided that I should do a Mean Teen Queen number. I'd never done a drag performance. I didn't know what to call myself. So I was just like, well, that one time I sort of had to perform a thing in a wig, I was Peach Cobbler. But I had this idea that somehow like Peach would be more of like a Southern Belle. So I was like, needs to be like Peach Cobbler. But then I didn't end up like that Southern Belle thing just sort of never stuck. But for whatever reason, Peach Cobbler was born. And then, you know, Isolde would start taking weeks off of Apocalypstic and ask me to fill in as the host. And so it's like, I just got more and more like, okay, well, I'm Peach now. I don't know what else, like sort of too late. So that's the odd genesis of Peach. And, you know, Peach ended up having quite the career. Like I had a weekly show in the West End for 5 years. And I've really only pulled back a lot because kids, because full-time job. It still brings me a lot of joy. It's just, you know, when you're up at 4 in the morning, it's hard to still be awake at 4 in the morning, you know?
Yeah, taking care of a 10-month-old is incredibly difficult. I have never done it myself, but that's such a funny story. I love that Peach Cobbler was a little accidental and now you are her, she is you. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like the accident that just sort of keeps on happening. It's very funny.
So you mentioned that Dexter, your elder child, was in a drag show with you and Cameron. Before that, how was you guys introducing drag to Dexter? Did you have to like tell him what drag is, or he was just kind of like growing up with it? You're like, yeah, I know what drag is. My dad's doing it and I'm in it.
There's never really been any there wasn't any introduction to it. I think the best comparison I can come up with is like, when your parent is a nurse and is just wearing their hospital scrubs, like as they go to work or come home from work, I don't think you sit down and talk about what nursing is. It's just like, that's a thing that my parent does to make a living. I think I prepared myself for it to be more of a conversation. Cause I remember, you know, I mean, we were doing like, we still had we each had our weekly shows when Dexter was born, and we kept them going for the first year of his life. So, you know, when he was a baby, I sort of was like, I wonder if when he sees us in makeup, if he'll be like, who the hell is this? But we smelled the same or something. I don't know. He wasn't scared because, you know, clowns can be scary and drag is not far off. Certainly the kind of drag I do is very clown. So it's just sort of part of the family business. But I only this week realized we have an annual gig hosting Pride in Kemble River. We've done it for about 10 years now. And I realized that when we go this year, it will be the first time that our baby will have seen us in drag, because, you know, he's growing up in a very different household, right? Like I go to work at a theater company, not in wigs and heels. And so I had that immediate like, wow, right. These two kids, because of where we were in our lives, because of the pandemic and just all of the dress up time we had together, they're having very different images of their parents. So stay tuned. Baby might think drag is terrifying. Who knows?
I'm just imagining Dexter like fully having been in a drag show and baby's like, what is drag?
Yeah.
So couldn't you tell me more about this gig of you hosting Pride? You said you've been doing it for 10 years.
We started, this incredible woman named Heidi Kapp, who is the programmer at the Tidemark Theater in Kemble River. She sort of introduced herself via email. And at first she brought us up one year to host like a Halloween Rocky Horror screening with, you know, where you sort of throw the stuff, and it was a lot of fun. And, And there's just such a huge contingent of queer people that came out to it, people that the theater had never seen before. And they thought, like, the queer community is actually like quite big here. They just don't have a gathering place. There's kind of nothing here for them as a united, fun outing. So she sort of started doing a pride event and brought us up the first year. And it was truly the most transformative thing I've ever done in drag, like kind of like doing Parents Are a Drag and seeing all these queer families like crying. It was that. It was like, you know, young non-binary and trans kids, like teenagers and tweens and queer partners who have just never really been to anything queer in the community they grew up in. So the theater was packed. They make us feel like we're movie stars. You know, they line up to get their photo taken with us. And it's so remarkable. And so we've only missed it twice. So, I mean, it's been a 10-year span, but we had to miss it twice, both times because we had children. So the first year it was like, we're just getting used to being parents. And the second time it was like, we actually can't do that date because that's the day we're due. So we don't want to go out of town. So it'll be nice to go back and back to our sort of home away from home on Vancouver Island and see all these, you know, we've developed these really meaningful relationships to the queer community there. They come year after year to see us, and we're able to bring in a whole bunch of other performers, some from the Lower Mainland and some from the island to join us, which is great.
I love that. These performers, do they tend to be the same performers like every year, or do you kind of switch it up every year?
We sort of switch it up. Yeah. You know, some years they'll book like Queer as Funk, amazing local queer funk band, oddly enough, right in the name. And so those years, it's like when we have a big band, it's just me and Isolde and then the big band. But this year it's sort of this drag extravaganza. I think there's six of us this year, which is a big show. And you know, it's more complicated as a family when we're like, okay, you and I both need to be in drag and we're going to have our two kids with us. So we need to bring someone else to help support with the kids while we're putting our makeup on. And also we need a bigger vehicle because when we have the stuff kids need plus two drag queens, that's a lot of luggage. So these are, you know, drag parent problems that we contemplate quite a bit.
I have never considered how much stuff you would need for drag and combining that with, especially for a 10-month-old.
And it all folds down, but my drag does not fold down the way I would love it to.
No, especially not those heels.
Yeah, I can pin it on the baby all I want. Like, oh, we can't fit in the car because of the baby. No, it's because, you know, I've got the giant suitcase plus like, you know, eight styled wigs on wig heads. Like we'll just pin it to the roof and see what happens.
Yeah. How do you transport your wigs?
You know what? I'm sure that there are logical ways to do that. I have never found them, but I'm not a very practical person. So.
Oh my God. That's so funny. And I don't know how to smoothly transition from this topic to my next question, so I'm just gonna abruptly do it.
Absolutely.
So Absolutely. You've written a lot of plays and they have been performed internationally. They are currently being performed internationally. I saw on your website that you have two works being presented in Poland right now, which is incredible. So can you talk to me a little bit about that, both logistically, like how do you get your work across the ocean? Do you apply to them? Do they maybe, like, is it through people? Does it happen directly? And then after that, I want to get into it a bit more of how that is for you personally as a playwright.
Yeah. So I'm very lucky that I have a phenomenal agent who, especially for international stuff, he's really helping get my work out there. His name is Colin Rivers, Marquee Entertainment, based out of Toronto. So a lot of the work he does is sort of develop lasting relationships with theaters. And there really is an appetite for Canadian Theatre for Young Audiences work in Europe. So we started conversations with a company in Germany and a company in Poland. And they have a sort of resident translator who I was able to work with and answer a bunch of questions for them. And then I've seen one of my plays in Polish. They did a live stream of it, which I was able to watch, and it was really wild. I mean, it's a very, very different play, like aesthetically, and they've really played with the text. And you know, my Polish is rusty, so I don't entirely. I trust that the translator did what makes the most sense for it to sort of have the same meaning, but in a Polish context, which in some cases, you know, I think one of the scenes was even reordered, and I was like, great, if this is what makes sense to, you know, to the people of your place, go for it. I have not seen my play, Ladies and Gentlemen, Boys and Girls, more recently premiered in Poland. And the joy of sort of these European companies is the plays don't really close, right? It's all repertory. So they do like, you know, 10 or 12 performances of it every year. So at some point, I mean, you know, I'm half Polish, so I should speak Polish, but I don't. At some point, I would love to be able to go and see them in person, particularly because, you know, I think possibly through my mom's own biases, I think of Poland as being a really hostile place for queer people. And yet, my play, Ladies and Gentlemen, Boys and Girls, is all about a trans kid coming out trans to their family. And that show is playing in Poland. And I think that's that, you know, I'm start I need to sort of understand that the world is not as it seems in headlines, right? Like, I think a lot of people could draw a lot of conclusions about where we live based on whatever headline they read, which isn't necessarily the heart of that place. So maybe I'll go to Poland in my future. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, so considering that, you know, you saw Poland as a m more hostile place for queer people, and knowing that your work was going to get produced in this country, what was that for you personally? Like, what did that feel like? Did you have doubts about it?
Oh, that's a good question. I was a bit nervous. That play required a lot more conversations with the theater about, like, these are the things that cannot change about the show. And there was a lot of conversation about how to find the title in Polish. And there was a lot of back and forth surrounding titles specifically. But I think more than anything, it's just exciting that, you know, again, that I'm able to offer some ideas to an audience that is potentially very, very different from me. Like, I don't know the day-to-day of being a high school or elementary school student in Poland. I don't. But it's very exciting that I'm able to be in conversation with them thanks to my agent and a translator and a company who believes in the work. Like, I think that's really powerful and magical. And on a personal note, you know, it's exciting that my Polish-speaking mother can see my work in Polish. It's wild. That's wild to me.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, that must be such a proud moment for
Yeah,
her.
it really
How
is. Yeah.
nice. Yeah. Is she in Canada or in Poland?
She's here. She's here. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, it's interesting how, like, you know, living in Canada, seeing, because Canada's, especially Vancouver, such a gay city. You
Yeah.
see, yeah.
And yet, I don't know if you've been following what's been happening at Carousel for the past year, but we've had like major alt-right protests at Carousel Theatre because of the kinds of work we do, specifically surrounding drag and young people. So again, I think, you know, we often have a perception of the city we live in as being a particular way. And I think because of just the hostility of the world right now, and certain politicians who have been very outspoken about how they feel, which has given, I think, everyone this permission to be a bit more venomous than perhaps they once were. Yeah, it's been a really challenging time, and so we're sort of standing at the ready, expecting that we may get protesters for Papa Penguin. We'll see.
That's wild. I did not know that. And you make such a great point, because I was gonna make similar, kind of like the counterpoint where living in a space like this, we forget that, like, sure, there are countries where, like, the same-sex marriage isn't legal, queer people are frowned upon, or even some countries where it's illegal to be queer. And you think, like, how can anyone live there? But queer people exist everywhere, even in those countries. But then also, you make a great point where there's the counterpoint where you think it's all great here. We have pride events. Our pride events don't get shut down by our government, which is amazing. But there are also, yeah, people who protest children's plays. Apparently, that's insane. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
I hope it's, you don't get protested for this, even if it is, they're, peaceful protesters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, we're kind of nearing the end of our time. Is there anything you want to talk about or mention before we go?
This has been so joyful. Thank you. I'm really excited by this play. I'm really proud of how much heart it has. And that's not like, I mean, yeah, I wrote it, but like there's just everyone in the room is bringing such open-heartedness, and I think it's going to really move. I think kids are going to have a great time, and I think grown-ups are going to really feel the intention of it. It's an all-ages show. I've written shows for specific target demographics, but this one, it's like there's stuff for the little kids, there's stuff for the adults, and we're all going to get different levels of the show. So I urge you young ones out there to come with your grown-ups. Certainly we live in a household where the youngest member of our household is 10 months and the oldest is 83. So we're going to have three generations coming to experience it, and get your tickets because I have a feeling it may sell out.
I hope it does. Yeah, and also it could be a nice conversation starter for families as well, because some people don't know how to start, conversations about homophobia or racism with their families because they might not necessarily experience it firsthand. So, for straight families, this might be a nice little, let's watch the play, and then afterwards we can have a conversation too.
Because I mean, and also like you don't know what you don't know, right? And so often it's really scary to try to have these conversations when you don't feel equipped to have them. So art is a beautiful way to, it's a beautiful conversation starter. Even on a personal note, like our son goes and does martial arts on the weekends, and we noticed that one of the teachers always, if there's something they need to tell the parents, they'll say like, make sure you go tell that to your mom and dad. And so my husband sort of gently offered in an email just saying like, hey, we've noticed that this is the language that we hear every week, something to consider. There isn't a mom in our family. That's not a word that our kid relates to. And also, there are many kids in this class who don't have two parents. There are some kids who live with their grandparents. Like, perhaps just consider using the word grown-ups. Like, tell this to your grown-ups because the kids will understand what that means. And it's just like it's gentle. I don't think our son even necessarily clocked, like, oh, they said I should say this to my mom, and I don't have, he doesn't care. But again, they were like, oh my God, yeah, you don't know what you don't know. And they didn't know that. And then they thought about it. And then they thought, oh my God, you're so right. So may this play perhaps open some of those I didn't know moments.
Yeah. And I'm great that they were so receptive to it.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that's amazing. Well, again, thank you so much for
Thank you.
joining me. This has been really nice talking to you. I appreciate it.
Likewise.